time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 7th of December 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 7th of December, I spoke to the chair of the Waiheke Local Board, Paul Waldron, about budget prioritisation. I was joined by the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and I talked with local board member Sharon Brown about the upcoming Oneroa Christmas Street Party. I'm joined by Paul Waldron, the chair of the local board. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Chris.
So we're going to have a chat this morning about this paper that was discussed at your first local board meeting. How did that go? First board meeting? First time in the chair's seat?
Yeah, no, it was really, really positive meeting. We had a tremendous amount of public input. I think we had around 20 public forum items. And so it was really great to see an engaged group of people there.
And was the meeting as long as the previous meetings have been? Were you still there at 10 o'clock at night?
We wound up before 10.
Well, that's good. I've never understood how a meeting that's longer than an hour can be productive.
Yeah, well, you know, it's certainly, if we're going to accommodate public forum, and I think we need to, because that's a really important part of a public meeting for a local board. I mean, we consumed over 2 hours on public forum, so, and on top of that, we had a extra public forum session earlier in the week to try and get through some of the detail of some of the items. So, you know, there are challenges there, but one of the things that the new board have resolved to do is to have fortnightly meetings, because I totally agree, I've seen some rubbish decisions made late at night, and, you know, if we're going to make good decisions, people need to be fresh.
So is that something that other boards are doing as well, moving to fortnightly meetings?
All boards, you know, deal with their business in different fashions. So some are, you know, having less meetings and doing more work under delegation. That's not something I'm a fan of. Some boards are having weekly meetings. Some are having fortnightly. Some are having a series of subcommittees. So, as a trial, we're trying this fortnightly meeting option and you know, getting less work done by portfolio holders and more openly in public meetings, less workshops, so we can, you know, make sure that we've got good sunshine on what's happening.
So, I mean, sometimes there's a feeling, isn't there, you know, because you have these long meetings and huge, big, long agendas, that some of the juicy stuff is left to the end, hidden by the obscurity of being late at night. And agenda item, I think 25 it was on the meeting the other day, was about this proposal around kind of rejigging the funding priorities.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this paper, so, I mean, in a nutshell, summarise for us what this paper kind of says, or what you've said. So this really is what you've written to the council and kind of set out a purpose, is it, or a kind of an agenda for the coming year?
Yeah, so let's talk about what the document was. It was a draft document to go out for public consultation for the local board agreement, which is the agreement that the local board has with the governing body of council, which outlines how it's going to spend its money over the next year. And so essentially we're looking for public feedback. There's a consultative process which rolls out over the next 4 months, and you know, every opportunity for the community to get involved. And so as a board, we've put our heads together and looked at what we see to be some of the priorities in the community today, and said, well, perhaps we could think about allocating some of this money differently, and we've put that up for discussion. So we haven't changed anything. We've put a document out for discussion. There's opportunity for the community to get involved. And then once we've adopted the final local board agreements, we'll then go to the governing body for sign-off. And I guess the significant shift that we've signalled in there is we have a series of budget lines available for boat ramps, for an extension to the Anitangi Sports Park to provide a new facility for the soccer club, and a number of other things. And when these budgets were put in place, Or should I say, since these budgets were put in place, there's been a number of things that have changed. And most significantly for me and for our community is the fact that our high school and primary school are about to get rebuilt. And as a consequence of that, there we will be losing our school pool. And here's an opportunity that we can actually redirect some of this money into getting a pool built now, in the immediate future. And so that's, you know, that seems to be the contentious, topic of debate.
And I don't think anyone can be surprised that, you know, that you're promoting the idea of a pool, because it's something that all five of you put as part of your platform. The what might have I suppose up or might in that proposal upset people more is that, you know, those projects of the sports club and the boat ramps, which are ones which, again, you know, the community's kind of lobbied for and put up arguments for, to see a reduction of funding for those.
Look, I wouldn't suggest it's a reduction of funding, at all. It's a reprioritisation of funding. And so there's every opportunity to go back next year. And, you know, over the coming year, it starts at the same time as our local board agreement consultation. We'll be looking at our local board plan, which carries us through the next 3 years. Something that came out of the early consultation up at the Aniatingi Sports Park a fortnight ago is that the building that's there is a lemon. It's just not working well at all for the community. And there really needs to be a bigger picture think about how we can make that park work better. And the other reality there is that, you know, $700,000 ain't going to scratch the surface. And so, but significantly also, there was some really low-hanging fruit. And just to remind yourself and viewers, the notion of the $700,000 was originally stimulated by a request from the soccer club to put in some ranch sliders and to move a water tank, of which there was an estimated value of work of between $15,000 and $20,000. And from that, the local board's gone off and come up with an idea to do something different. So the soccer club have identified previously some low-hanging fruit, I'd call it. The other day there was discussion about public barbecues, rejigging car parking, having a mustering area for buses and these sorts of things. So, you know, I think there's a whole lot of really good short-term opportunities. But I think in the long term, there could be some merit. And if the community buys into the vision, in doing something bigger picture, but prioritising today's money into the pool.
So there may be some, I suppose, who question, you know, the shifting of funding priorities from something which is doable, tangible, if you like, because, you know, the sports club is there. It's within our means to make those changes to it. The boat ramps are there. The pool is kind of in the never-never. You know, this, are we taking money from things which are in the here and now to something which may never happen?
Look, I can assure you, Chris, that, you know, boat ramps and swimming pools and extensions to the Aniatingi Sports Park have been in the never-never for a long time. There's around $500,000 set aside for boat ramps over the next 2 years, and it's forecast that money would cover scoping and consenting. So we're still not looking at boat ramps. You know, we've got major issues there. And then I have to ask myself, in a community that lives on an island, you know, really priority-wise, is it sensible to be putting money into boat ramps when we can't teach our kids to swim? There's that there. The school pool or the community pool has been for many, many years in the too hard bin. And I get that. And Bex has done some outstanding work over recent months, contacting, phoning, writing to almost every community in the country that's been building pools. And she's got some wonderful resources as to cost models, and they've just been really happy to support. But I'm absolutely confident that we can build a pool for a reasonable amount of price. One of the costings that came, you know, so we believe, based on what other schools have been doing, that we can build a significant size pool, two pools, in fact, for around $1 million. Now, recent estimates that have come through from the bureaucratic models that would be looking to build a pool for us have estimated that there'll be around $1 million worth of project management fees if they're to build it. We're a tremendously resourceful community. We can get this done. There's huge support out there for it, and it's just a matter of willingness. And part of this for me, and the reason I wanted to make sure it was in the draft, was to send a signal to the school or the schools that we're serious, because one of the issues for the primary school in particular is they're looking to rebuild their school. They need to keep functioning as a school, so one of their options is to rebuild the school where the soccer fields are and the sports fields, where the kids play at lunchtime. Another opportunity is to build it, or a large chunk of it, where the swimming pool is. So if they know there's a light at the end of the tunnel with the pool, it gives them a bit of scope to ensure that you know, the school can actually function well. And this is going to have a tremendous effect on, you know, 2 or 3 years worth of kids going through schools. You know, trying to learn in a construction zone is going to be a nightmare. Yeah.
So the proposals go out for consultation. One of the other messages that we, you know, that came up a lot during the election,
yep,
was that, you know, this process of consultation, and you know, yourself and the other successful board members all talked about consulting in different ways, being more consultative. So you know, you've got this there, you've got a consultation period.
Yep.
What's going to look different around this consultation than has happened in the past?
Oh, well, a couple of significant things, Chris. Firstly, we could have made this decision without going to community consultation. We could have just made this decision to reallocate this money in a board meeting. We've opted to put it through the most robust consultative procedure available because we want to listen. We knew that it was going to, you know, generate community interest. We appreciate and understand that there's a significant portion of the community that are involved with the soccer club that have got their hopes up, you know, because there's an expectation that this money is going to be there, and I get that. And I guess the message to them at the end of the day is, you know, if you guys are determined that that you want this money, then I don't think the board's going to push back on that. But, you know, I think we have to have a mature conversation as a community and say, is this the best priority for this funding at the moment?
So, I mean, that process of having that mature discussion is something that needs to be managed, though, doesn't it? I mean, if we look at, say, the Marine Reserve debate, for example, it's turned into anything but a mature discussion, and seems to be a bit of tit for tat. How are we going to avoid that happening?
Oh, well, the great thing is that we're going into a legislative prescribed procedure. It's called the Special Consultative Procedure. It's the most robust procedure available under the Local Government Act for community consultation. So, you know, it's full public notification, full submission process, written and oral. Decisions and deliberations are made in public. You know, there's nothing more robust that we could be looking to do.
Yeah. So a number of other issues which, you know, people are expecting some move on, and I suppose some of those will come through with the development of the board plan, say, like, the, you know, the issues of the Esplanade and so on. You'd be dealing with those in a similar way?
Yeah, so we, at our first board meeting last week, we've asked Auckland Transport and Auckland Council officers, traffic planners, urban designers to go and have a look, review the results of the community survey that was done by the Esplanade Group, to meet with community groups, the schools, you know, representatives of various user groups, the Pony Club, the Marae affected parties, and also to have a look at the decision matrix that was used at the time the board decided to reopen the road to cars. And look at alternatives that give a weighting priority to active users, you know, walkers and cyclists and horse riders, and come back to the board with some results and some options. You know, there's no question that what is there isn't working that well. And I can testify to that every time. Well, the last two times I've taken my bicycle around there, I've got from one end to the other with a flat tyre. It's just an absolute mess.
Is there any sense of how much has been spent on remedial work since it reopened? It seems that almost every day there's changes being made.
Yeah, I know. Look, just with respect to the buffer blocks, you know, they've spent in excess of $20,000 just on that alone. So, you know, God knows what's been spent on the rest of it.
All right, so more to come on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Most definitely.
Right, well, thanks, Paul. So the consultation period on those funding priority proposals, that opens when?
So the draft that we adopted today will go out for notification in January. And then I'd have to check the dates, but, you know, sort of February, March, there'll be submission process through there. So, that's there. Now, there is still ongoing a community consultation at the sports park tomorrow morning. From 10 till 2. So Gary Wilson will be down there, and there will be a number of board members through at various times during the day. Just looking, you know, at the opportunities and the potentials for the park. At the same time as we're having this conversation about this money, I met with the mayor last week and, you know, threw the cards on the table as to the pool. as well as a number of community issues and issues for the board. And he's very supportive, and he's asked that once we can refine our costings that we come back and see him. He's designated one of his staff to be a liaison, and he's very keen to look at other ways we can attract funding for this. He said it would be a lot more supportive if we can find a community benefactor to make some sort of contribution. But I guess the other thing is that, you know, in the event that we can attract funding, extra funding from the governing body, the money that we're talking about reallocating is still available for those groups. So, you know, we're having a conversation as a community. It's still worth following through and seeing what the opportunities are at the park. And, you know, fingers crossed we can get some more money from the mayor, we can get the pool done, and we can use the 700 grand at the park.
All right, thanks very much, Paul Walden, for the chair of the local board.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
It's the first Saturday of the month, so I'm joined by the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
Good Hello.
Morning. Good morning,
Good morning to you both. All right, so we've got a few things to
talk
about.
We do, don't we?
Yeah, it's been quite a week. What, old Taylor Swift arrived with all her Swiftlets, and then the old supermarket had another of its blazes, and you know, it's all happening.
Yeah, they really need to stop setting fire to the supermarket. I mean, no matter how many times they do it, it's never going to be fashionable.
No,
it's just annoying.
Well, my first thought was for the poor little sparrows that live in the supermarket. You know, there are a couple of lovely little sparrows that live inside the supermarket.
Yes.
And do they know to drop and roll and hold or fly into the smoke? I really felt for them. I was looking in the deli when they'd reopened where there were crispy little birds in the deli, but no.
It certainly all smells a bit singed in there at the moment, doesn't it?
But the whole idea of those fellas taking their smoker outside in the spot where all the throwaway cardboard boxes are, that doesn't seem to be a go, you know?
No, they've really got to stop doing that. I didn't know who Taylor Swift was, I have to confess.
I don't know any of his songs. Have you got him on the playlist?
Don't know if we have or not, actually. I'll have a look.
The thing that amused me about the Taylor Swift visit was she ended up at Stony Ridge, which I imagine would have been like all the wet dreams come at once for the proprietor of that fine vineyard, you know, to have the blonde teenage rock star.
Let's not go down that. Let's not go down that particular route.
You're meaning because of all of the great publicity.
Great publicity.
Yes.
She must be quite a thirsty little soul because she seemed to have spent her day on a wine.
I've been noting this on the beer tours that now that the island has something in the region of 30 wineries, last year it only had one brewery, now it's got two, this time next year it's going to have three. Yeah. There's already a couple of distilling operations going, and I know of at least another two that are in the pipeline, just waiting for their licenses to come through. This island is turning into one brilliant place for the production of alcohol.
Well,
so bring on the fleet of buses with the white tiled interior and full wheelchair access. And I think booze tourism is
imagine if you tried to do the whole Waiheke winery crawl.
Yes.
You wouldn't be lucid at the end of that.
Of course not. Yeah. How was your weekend on Waiheke? My head hurts and I got a tattoo I don't remember getting.
Well, that's pretty much what Taylor Swift said. She said it was a lovely place.
Yes.
Bless her.
What she could remember of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're an international pop star and you've got the money to be tripping around the world with your mates, then, you know, coming and spending the afternoon sipping wine at the vineyard.
It was more than a sip of wine. You should see the reports. She stopped at one winery and bought a case and stopped at another winery and bought a couple of crates. And
that's what it's there for.
The next winery and bought some more crates.
Oh, good luck to her. Yeah.
Yes, excellent.
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Did you see the pictures she posted with Instagram pictures of her?
Yeah, do you think it has an impact, that kind of stuff? I mean, you know, it's, you know, tweeting around the world about what a wonderful place it is. Do you think that makes a difference?
I haven't thought about that because there's sort of formal channels of publicity, which I think that works. You know, it would have got out into the blogosphere and the poposphere and all of that, you know, the kind of media that reaches those people. But there's also an informal version. You know, all the Argentinian all the young Argentinians that somehow discovered the island, I think they did that sort of informally. It must have just been... I don't think there was a big publicity drive in Argentina saying, going to this...
No, I think that was more to do with a some kind of reciprocal deal on working visas with various South American countries.
Well, it could have been a friend told a friend. It's a cool place.
And I think also there's the whole wine industry thing of that. Yeah. But yes, you know, thinking back to the... There was a time when you didn't see South Americans on Waiheke, and now there's loads. And I think
a feature, and they're quite lovely.
Yes, they're a good feature of the island.
Sipping mate on
they the certainly know how to sit up late and party.
I bless them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think there are two forms of publicity. There's an informal, probably social media version, which the Argentinian kids probably use, and then there's the other, I don't know, try hard version with 18 and 100% pure and all of those guys trying to promote New Zealand and the island, yeah.
So the whole fire at the supermarket has rekindled, pun intended. The talk of a new supermarket.
Yeah.
Now, perhaps Countdown had hoped that we'd all forgotten about that. You know, after the last fire, within 18 months, we're going to have a new supermarket.
Yes, there is no sign whatsoever that anything is happening
and
there.
And do we care? Does it matter?
It's quite an interesting one. A lot of people say our supermarket is so desperately inadequate and all of that, but I get around it okay.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
Yeah, I think
the only time it is definitely inadequate is Christmas and New Year.
Lots of visitors.
When lots of visitors arrive, you know, the people with no cobwebs on their cars all arrive and want to use it at the same time. Mm. But really, when you think you can get an off-island pass on the car ferry, go over to Pakuranga, go to New World and Pack and Save, and if you buy a month's worth of groceries there, you've saved the car fare, ferry fare already.
Yeah.
And plus you get to go to all those wonderful places like the tofu shop and the Aussie Butcher, and that's great shopping to do once every 5 or 6 weeks or so.
So right behind the Totally Locally campaign.
I was about to disagree with Alan. I'm right for the Totally Locally.
I'm with the Totally Locally, but you know there are certain things that you're never ever going to find here.
That's true, yeah.
You know, I'm thinking particularly of all the Asian food shops along Terakau Drive. There are some absolutely amazing places along there. The Chinese-run grocery shops with the densely packed shelves and the alarming aromas in there and everything. We simply don't have those on the island, and I for one love Asian food shops.
There's one public message I'd like to give to our supermarket: is their packaging is just over the top. You know, there was a Countdown got the very worst prize for the worst packaging in the New Zealand Worst Packaging Awards a month or so ago, you know, where they put vegetables in a polystyrene tray and shrink wrap it, you know.
Yeah, not
like
good.
The veggies have got their own wrapping. It's called the skin. So you don't need the polystyrene tray. But they continue to do it. It's just like not acceptable. And they won't listen. I went up the food chain, pun intended, a few months ago to right up to the manager of fresh produce for Countdown throughout New Zealand and said to him, mate, this is not acceptable. And he got very aggressive with me and told me he wasn't going to listen to me. Yeah.
You greeny bastard.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're whinging.
What am I now? Tomato hugger.
Yes.
that's exactly, that was the subject of the conversation. I said, I wanted to get down to the skin of my...
But it definitely does appear that there is no, you know, ground has not been broken on the new supermarket project. I was going to go and chase this up yesterday, but didn't have time. But I will actually, before next month, I promise I will make this a project. I'll get on the phone to Countdown and actually ask them see if I can actually get a statement from them on whether that supermarket is going to happen or not. Mm. And if it is going to go ahead, when and who's going to run it? Because they haven't got enough staff to run the one they've got.
We'd
have to assume that the new one is going to require a lot more staff. Where will these staff come from, given that no one on the island wants to work there?
It's interesting. The supermarket gets quite a few commuters, you know, coming this way. There's a sort of new sub-demographic of the island or the people working.
Yes. Prepared to actually do the commuting to get minimum wage at the supermarket.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit sad.
Yeah, but there it is. But still, do we really need a whole flash new supermarket? This one is adequate, except for 2 or 3 days a year when the visitors are all crowding the aisles. And,
yeah. My only complaint about it would be I wish they'd get rid of all the sort of the warehouse style plasticky bits and pieces that we don't really need to buy them. And
the toys and things.
Get more food in rather than toys and bedding. And,
yeah, there's a weird thing. Above the meat counter, there are all those plastic toys, and they don't seem to sit together.
Yeah. Plus the... what have they got in there at the moment? They've got suitcases.
Yeah.
I mean, weird who thing. Does the buying for these shops? And are they drunk? Because really, we just don't need those things in there, and the shelves would be better off filled with food.
It does seem a bit odd at the time when everyone's coming here on holiday to have suitcases because they've already brought them.
But talking about people who must be drunk on the job, I've always been confused about how you can have presumably adult, presumably intelligent, presumably educated people out there holding down these jobs called... television programming executives, you know, the crap they put up. And I had this most
stop watching TV.
I had this most amazing reprieve. The TV went fits last Sunday. You know, we had all these warnings about blah, the TV.
Yeah, going digital.
Yeah, so it went fits. And it's been the most wonderful thing, you know.
Oh, we've been doing that in our house for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Our TV aerial got knocked sideways in a storm, and we just found that we were better off without the TV.
I found it this week. I've got this. If you do switch on the TV, you get this lovely blue light, and it's like, and it's very calming. You could meditate.
You could get one of those DVDs you put in, and it turns it into a fish tank. You just see fish swimming around.
But at least I don't have to watch Sally Ridge or Aussie Cops or
exactly. Yeah, it's horrible.
Body
Absolutely
Farm
horrible.
Or something. You know, it's just this amazing level of drivel that is now extinct from our house. It's wonderful.
Speaking of horrible drivel, that brings us neatly on to the latest shenanigans going on social media, which I think we
horrible
really...
Drivel.
Horrible drivel.
I must have missed it.
There's always been a... what we're dealing with here, of course, is the supporters, the small group of supporters of the former local board.
Probably.
You know, you would have hoped but by this point that they'd have let it go and accepted that their A-team got horrendously beaten.
So what are
I didn't want
now?
To go back over this. You know, I thought we'd pretty much drawn a line under this a month ago when we did the election roundup, and we wouldn't really have to go back there. I certainly didn't want to have to be talking about it on Facebook or writing about it on One Way Hickey or anything like that. But it is very interesting to see that there is this sort of the wreckage of the previous local board. There is some weird stirrings. And
so what are they saying? Sorry, I haven't seen it. You've got to get me up to speed.
Yes, I should have actually brought some quotes along because it's quite funny. They managed to make it look like they're posting on Facebook whilst writing in crayon.
Mm.
But there was somebody raising the idea that the election was actually stolen, that it was all rigged, and it's all getting rather hysterical. I'm sort of waiting for somebody to actually say, "We want to see Paul Walden's birth certificate, the full version, mind you."
Well, in the news this week it was announced New Zealand and Denmark are the two least corrupt countries in the world.
Yes, just because we're the least corrupt doesn't mean there isn't corruption. Auckland Transport, of course, proved that quite successfully a month or so ago. Mm. Auckland Council is, of course, riddled with corruption.
Yeah. And I often wonder whether, is ours an acceptable level of corruption?
I don't think there any level of corruption is acceptable.
Oh, interesting one. So we'll look forward to seeing what happens to old Banksy.
Oh, well, I mean, we know what's going to happen there. The guy's doomed. He's gone. He's taken the ACT party down with him.
Yeah. But that's what happens to... That should be what happens to corruption, hey?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The man's a fool. At least he can be voted out. What worries me, though, is people at the council who we don't get to vote for, and their corruption is hushed up, and they're sent on leave with full pay and so forth, and we never really get to the bottom of it.
Mm.
Well, speaking of
quite
people
worrying.
Who work for the council who we don't elect, I think there was a lot of concern, wasn't there, that when Auckland Council was going to release its report on the marina, that, you know, they would be supporting it going ahead. Now, in the end, we've got a report which...
That was rather a pleasant surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, from the planning department, who were saying, no, this shouldn't proceed.
Yeah, that it's going to make a complete mess and will affect any chance of expanding the existing transport facilities. That really was a very pleasant surprise to see that happen.
Yeah, but it remains to be seen whether it has much effect at the court hearing.
There does seem to be a change of, not a change of position, but certainly you know, in terms of getting out there and promoting it from the original promoters. I did try to get Graham Guthrie on the show today, and you know, he's not available. I noticed he hasn't been speaking, you know, to the papers when they've been running articles on that
I looked in both papers to see if there was any comment from him or any of his supporters, and there wasn't.
There's been widespread rumours on the island on the underwriters of the project. Sort of,
yeah, so we won't.
No, let's not go down there. Go down that track.
But yes, but you're right. There have been many rumours.
Yes, there's a proper place for completely wild, unsubstantiated rumours, and that place is Facebook. Not on the wireless.
You were going to say the place for wild, unsubstantiated rumours is a little island in the South Pacific called Waiheke.
Yes,
it's almost like Rumour Central sometimes.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
But the correct place for it is on Facebook.
Oh, bless Facebook.
Not on the radio. We are a responsible radio station. Yes. Here, are we not?
We are.
Yeah.
But yes, are they at the point where they're going to say, yeah, the jig's up, this isn't going to happen, or will they fight on?
There was
one opponent of the marina was calling for one more big protest against it, something that would make the television news and really sort of drive the final stake through the heart of this odious idea. And then, you know, once that one is dead and buried, we'll all draw a breath, have a beer, and then prepare ourselves for the next ridiculous assault on our lifestyle. Because it will never end.
It'll just keep coming.
The price of living on Waiheke is constantly having to fight horrible projects like that and oppose greed heads who want them.
One thing I was thinking of earlier, I don't know if it's a bad project, I certainly don't think it's a bad project, but we're talking about things that appear to be too big for the island, and the new library looks pretty big, doesn't it?
It does a bit, yes.
But a library is a good thing.
I'm not going to speak against libraries. Libraries. Libraries are good.
But it just seems such a beautiful building.
Yes, there was that famous example of the new public library that was built in central Sydney some years ago at huge expense. It was twice the size of the original library, but it turned out that most of the new space was for cafeterias, gift shops, and that in fact, when the place was opened, it was found to have less books than the old library.
I'm very intrigued to see how our new library will accommodate more books and more shelving, apparently.
Yes.
But it's a beautiful building from the outside. But
if there will be more books, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. It's just a bit startling in its scale. So maybe we were used to a library that was too small or too not visible enough as a public building or whatever. Yeah.
I think a community of this sort, where everyone is pretty well educated, we deserve a decent library.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I think
it's a shame that an awful lot of money was spent on the hiring of a construction company to build it, who promptly went belly up and left the place looking like Christchurch for 6 months.
The latest is that it should be ready in late April or May next year. Probably been set back, 8 months or so? Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that was pretty undignified.
Mm. No, I think it's going to be great, though.
But anyway, it was really interesting to see that, you know, when we got in here this morning, there's the chairman of the local board answering questions. It's like, we haven't seen that for a few years, have we?
Well, no, to be fair, Faye did turn up for interviews.
And, all right. And, okay, yeah, well, it was nice to see the chairman of the local board here making sense.
well said, Alan, yeah.
Because now we have all this, because this is one of the things I was referring to that's kicked off on social media, is some fairly wild statements being made about the possibility of reallocating funding that was supposed to be going to things at the Onitangi Sports Park. Mm. And would the community really be more in favour of it going towards a pool or whatever? What I want to know is, how much more money do sports fans in this country want? I mean, that sports park was only completed, 10 years ago? Mm. At huge expense. I mean, that must have cost millions and millions of dollars to do.
It's a good sports park.
Oh, yes.
The fields are very good quality.
But already we've got, you know, this small number of people who like chasing a ball around a muddy field are going, oh, we want more funding, more funding. Why does sport have to be funded so much? What good does it do?
There'd be plenty of people in the cultural area, say.
Yes, well, I remember when the sports park was being built, of course, I was working at Artworks Theatre, struggling to get even a tiny amount of money for things like a theatre where plays could be put on and meetings could be held and things, whereas the knuckle-dragging set who like playing rugby, they get as much money as they want. Mm. So there was a... someone we were talking to last night who was sort of saying, oh, you know, this isn't going to go down well. The it's looking like the sports park will be starved of funding. And it's like, I don't think you've got much traction with this one. Mm. I think most of the people on the island are going, who cares about the sports park?
Yeah.
They get so much money anyway.
Yeah. The one thing the island apparently is missing is a squash court. Some people have been worrying about a squash court and the swimming pool, of course, for many years.
That would be lovely, actually, a squash court. I think I'm a bit old to play squash now, but I used to like playing squash.
But just responding to your point about too much money for sport and not enough for the cultural things, I think the new library development may have some collateral benefit. Once the library is up and running, it'll be this beautiful building, and we'll see how inadequate the theater behind it is and the art gallery next to it is and the musical museum. Yes. So maybe in the longer term we'll get new buildings for those as well.
It would be rather nice, but I'm not holding my breath.
No, I think it's possible. There's a long-term vision of a sort of integrated art center with all of architectural quality like the library, and they all kind of be working around there's going to be an outdoor amphitheater at the back of the library, and these other buildings could work around that, and it would be lovely.
As long as they just, you know, leave space for a little old decrepit wooden house at the top of the
No, this is not a decrepit house. We should describe for the listeners, the White House is an iconic piece of white. It's too
busy. I doubt if there's a radio station in the world that has a view out of its window as nice as this
one. Speaking of that view this morning, enormous yacht out there.
Is there?
I
can't see a thing.
Absolutely. Motor yacht, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, this is getting into ship territory. The thing out there at the moment.
Well, it's one of our.
I didn't see it.
It's the usual. It's the old millionaires. The invasion of millionaires routine, all happening all over again.
At least the bigger boats will probably not be expelling all their sewage into the bay, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're really waiting for—is for Only Road Bay once more to be turned into a great big septic tank because the yachties can't be bothered going out to sea to pump out their toilets.
And I just wanted to finish off just with kind of any kind of thoughts on the passing of Nelson Mandela.
Oh yes. It's very sad, yeah.
But I think he was 95.
Yeah,
I think you know that when anyone you know younger than the three score years and ten jumps the twig, it's very sad. When somebody of 95 dies, it's more like good on you. 95 years old, and you know you made your mark on the world. Terrific,
did. Yeah, I think the positive out of it is that leadership in South Africa will take a good look at itself, and I think. The moral authority that Mandela had and other leaders, famous leaders of South Africa like Tutu and so on, will rub off on the new generation of leadership within the ANC, because the ANC has got its problems and the current current leader Zuma is certainly inadequate. But I think but within the ANC there are a lot of younger leaders who will model themselves on Mandela and model themselves with that sort of moral authority. The country is I think it's set up for a shining future. There's a very interesting development in the country where the new opposition leader, a woman called Mamfele Ramfele, and she is everything that Zuma isn't. But she set herself up in opposition to the ANC, which is difficult because the ANC is such a dominant party. But Ramfele has got extraordinary credentials. She's a medical doctor. She's got a PhD. She's got a couple of honorary PhDs. She's got incredible business acumen. She was the vice chancellor of the University of Cape Town.
Wow.
She's everything Zuma isn't. If she could become the leader of the country, that'd be a great advantage. But that said, there's still good leaders with young leaders within the ANC if they can just come through the old guard of corrupt old buggers, you know.
Always the way.
Yeah. The other it's a bit of a sort of a weird aside, but I wonder if the world's going to come onto a little lesson in pronunciation, you know, all these names, Mandela is going to be buried in his home village, which is called Kunu.
You did the little click there.
Yeah, Kunu. And his second name is Roli Hlahla. And, of course, he's from the tribe called Xhosa. So, his nickname is Madiba. So we've got to get the pronunciation right. So there's your primer on and cause pronunciation.
Well, I can't wait to hear John Key having a go at that because he's
yeah, he's going to go on the visit. Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, he's. I do think Mandela's passing is actually a moment for the nation to look at itself, look at its moral direction, and actually pull itself right.
We can but hope so.
Yeah, no. You've got to still accept it's a great functioning democracy even now, even with its faults. And that's Mandela's legacy, yeah. Mm. Mm.
All right, well, we'll call it quits there. Thank you very much to Alan Knight and Alex Stone, the Opinionated Islanders, for joining us in the studio. And we'll be back. We'll consult on what's happening next month, early in January. It's often a difficult time, I know.
But, oh, it'll be lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be, maybe we should have a guest spot, a visitor. We could get a random visitor off the street and get that person to come, come and sit.
Or insist that they hold forth on local issues.
Taylor Swift wants to come.
Yeah, Taylor Swift, yeah, we could have her between us. And we could ask her whether she thinks our supermarket's big enough and things like that.
Yes. Hey, we never got around to talking about the banners in Oniroa. I found that one quite funny.
The banners?
Yes, apparently the local board decided that the tatty-looking banners that they put up on the...
The Christmassy ones.
The Christmassy ones wouldn't be going ahead, and apparently this was going to cancel Christmas and shut down all the businesses in Oniroa.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you very much to Alan and Alex. Turn your microphones off now. So off you go. And.
Wakey Radio.
I'm speaking with Sharon Brown from the local board. Good morning, Sharon.
Oh, hello.
So, Sharon, so you've taken over the part of your role here as organising the Oniroa Christmas Street Party, and you've had to jump into that pretty quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. So how far along? I mean, what was involved with that? How far along was the organisation of the party, and you know, was it just simply a matter of kind of picking it up and completing arrangements, or has it involved more than that?
Oh, look, I mean, I think you know, it's a new local board, so of course we're trying to add our own flavour to the event. I do feel really strongly that it's a community event for families and children. We've got the incredible support of Helen Sanders at Auckland Events, and she's organising, you know, Music in the Parks, which is, you know, 40 events in town, but she's really spending a bit of time to try and get local providers on board for this event. And it's been quite tricky because she doesn't know a lot of people on Waiheke, and so I've kind of been suggesting that she talks to this person or that person and brings on some local talent. And so that's all been quite, you know, we haven't had that long to do it. And you know, it's Christmas and things are hotting up and people have already made arrangements, and so some people join in and then cancel, and it being Waiheke, you know, there's lots of changes of plan all the time. But I'm really, really excited because there's some really cool stuff happening. And what's particularly nice is I think she's been able to bring her knowledge and expertise of what's available in Auckland. So from Auckland we've got Intuit, which are coming with a jousting game, some scooters, and are setting up at the bottom of the road. And what I think is special about that is it's things that on Waiheke we might not have access to. It's things that we might not have access to. And so it's a nice opportunity for kids to experience something different and have access to something different. I'm hoping that Sergio is going to come back with basketball, but I'm not sure that that's been confirmed yet. He did that at last year's event. And then at the same time, we've got Zibby's Creative, and they're going to make a make-and-take stall. So they're a local provider. I think they organise the Teddy Bears Picnic, and they're going to be doing making musical instruments and helping the kids dress up. And then there's going to be a little procession with kids, which is all about making as much noise as you can, dressing up, blinging your bike or your scooter if you've got one, although that might be impractical for a lot of parents, and then walking through Oniroa. And that procession starts at 4.
So, I mean, it sounds like the focus is on the kids participating in the event.
Oh, absolutely. Kids and also parents. But at the same time, we're hoping that the road is closed off. People can rediscover the road. There are going to be some little, hopefully some little nooks and crannies with bits and pieces happening, like face painting. And we've also, she's also managed to access a badge making kit. And I'm hoping that BYO Bag might be able to manage that. And then people can make, because it's been a huge initiative at the schools around getting rid of plastic bags. So I'm hoping that kids can make, little badges with their own messages on them around, you know, either issues that they've done in school or they're interested in, like the things like, you know, getting rid of plastic or speed kills, or but it could also just be festive Christmassy stuff, and it's just creating a space where kids can do that and make a badge. And then she's got some giant games as well, which are things like giant Connect Fours and Jenga, and she's going to bring those over.
And so, what about entertainment? You've got music and stuff as well?
Yes, yeah, so a lot of the entertainment was locked down from before. Pat Ehrlich has organised a whole bunch of kids who are quite, you know, I think they're mostly primary school kids, who are going to do a few songs for us. I believe we might have access to quite a funky band, and they're going to be playing and part of the day, but I'm not sure if that's been confirmed. But there'll be some music on the main stage, which is going to be outside Ray White's. And then at 4:30, of course, we've moved the date from the 7th to the 14th to be able to combine with the totally locally Christmas cracker draw, which is also a local initiative, which is absolutely wonderful. And they've agreed to have the prize draw at 4:30. And I've just seen Tanya Batten. She's told me that she'll be drawing the prize. Now, we're hoping that people really get into the spirit of it, dress up if they want Christmassy stuff, get their kids to dress up. And you know what Waiheke's like, eh? Everyone likes dressing. Well, not everyone, but some people really like dressing up. So even if you haven't got kids and you feel like dressing up, that's the place you can go.
Yeah. So you've got a band. You've got Pat Ehrlich doing some music. You've got the Hip Operation Crew as well.
Well, we did ask them. Helen asked them. I haven't been privy to that conversation. Apparently, they're not available. I have spoken to someone else since then, and they said they get the feeling they're quite tired. They've had a really big year, and they're being asked to perform quite a lot for different things. And I think they're regrouping.
Yep.
But you know, if they feel like coming, that's absolutely fine, and I'm sure we can make a space for them. And that's the same for other things. The other thing that we heard was that there was the shops on the top part of the road by the for example, Steve the Butcher's. The vintage store felt that they were a little bit left out last year. So what we're trying to do is organise a busker somewhere in that bus stop area so that there's a bit more flow up and down the street, and also the bus stop is being moved slightly further up the street as well. So we're hoping that we can include some of those shops as well and extend the space in which people can enjoy it.
So with the road closure, which parts of the road are closed?
So it's basically the part between the two roundabouts is closed. So that's the bit outside the post office all the way up to the top roundabout. So there's a, and it's being closed from 11. We can't close it any later than that. I know shops have expressed concern. There will be posters all the way up and down the street telling, or on the bus stops, telling people that it's being they're being relocated and the road will be closed. And I'm hoping that the press will have it, and I'm also telling you, so hopefully everyone will know that the road is closed. The only real issue seems to be getting to the chemist, but they have said that they'll be in touch with the doctor's office, and if there's any emergency, they can maybe liaise around getting some medication out. But also, if you do feel that you need something specifically from the chemist, try and do it before 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we're hoping it's going to be a really great day, and that there'll be things for all different ages. I'm trying to organise a treasure hunt for the sort of, 11 to 14s or maybe slightly older, and then there'll be prizes as well.
Yeah. And Santa.
And of course, Santa. Yes, Santa will be there. We can't find the grotto, but we're looking for the grotto as we speak. I don't know. Does he bring his own grotto? I don't know. yes, so Santa will be there. And Santa might also be walking around Saturday morning, but he's pretty busy, and we're not sure if we've been able to pin him down in his busy timetable, but we're hoping that he'll be walking around Saturday morning and creating a bit of an atmosphere.
Good stuff.
Yes. And I think Alan Knight knows Santa quite well. So we might be asking him if he could ask Santa to come on Sunday morning.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a good fun day and lots of things, particularly for kids to do. So, well
yes.
done.
Yes. So come out and enjoy, everyone.
Yeah. Good. Okay. So it's next Saturday in Oneroa from 2 till 5 p.m. It's going to be a beautiful sunny day. Nice day to hang out on those grassy banks, enjoy some music, get your kids active and participating.
Mm. Can I just do a plug for Sculpt Oneroa, or have you done one already?
I haven't, but you can.
Oh, okay. Yep. Great. So Sculpt Oneroa is opening at 6 o'clock on Friday night, and we're hoping that shops will stay open a bit later. Some shops have agreed to do a bit of late night shopping, so if you're coming back Friday evening and you feel like doing a bit of Christmas shopping and also still being in the draw for the Christmas cracker on Saturday, yes, hang out in Oneroa, see the opening of the sculptures, hear a bit about them because the artists are going to be there, and that's assembling outside Paura's at Paura's sculpture shop by Solar at 6 o'clock.
Good stuff.
Okay, cheers okay. for that.
Thanks, Sharon.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa.